Extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello guys and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. Today, looking at underperforming sides, it's me, it's Doogie Critchley.
Hello.
And it's the return of Joseph Tomlinson.
Hello.
Fresh from interviewing a dog.
The
so
American.
This should be slightly more intellectually stimulating for you.
Maybe, 50% chance of that. I think you two are mongrels yourselves.
Hey, what a return. What a return. Let's dive straight in.
Right, so I am kicking off this podcast with Real Betis. I'm going to basically not do my usual deep dive into their history and, you know, where their president was born. I'm going to keep it relatively brief. I'm just going to talk about last season, their summer, and this year. Because last season was a season that promised so much, but they ultimately finished 10th. They had wins against Sevilla, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, and Real Madrid, and drew a lot of acclaim, and rightly so. They were the first side to win at the Camp Nou and the Bernabeu in the same league season since Real Mallorca in 2002-03. They had been as high as 6th on the 3rd of February, just 4 points off Champions League placed Sevilla at that time, but they won only 5 of their remaining 15 league games and ended up 11 points off the Champions League spots and 9 points clear of relegation. So very much middle of the pack, but a real downgrade on what could have been an otherwise great season. They did have a good couple of runs in cup competitions even. They beat Racing Santander, Real Sociedad and Espanyol to reach the Copa del Rey semi-finals, where they lost 3-2 on aggregate to winners Valencia. They had a good run in the Europa League too as well. Not a team we often associate with European competition, but they were drawn in a group with the Olympiacos, AC Milan and a Luxembourg team called F91 Dudelange. Who I've never heard of.
They are my favourite team from Luxembourg.
Indeed. They topped the group. They went unbeaten. They only scored 7 goals, but they conceded just 2. Very solid. They beat the AC Milan. Not a great AC Milan side, but beat them nonetheless at the San Siro. In the round of 32, they're eventually knocked out by Rennes. But for a side that was only promoted from the Segunda Division in 2014-15, this is a pretty special achievement to go not that far in the Europa League, but get out of a group and beat AC Milan away. Lo Celso, who I'll come on to in due course, was absolutely crucial to that Europa League run. They scored 11 goals in the competition. He contributed 6 of them, playing in the end off the main striker as a number 10. The stats suggest that they weren't a vintage sort of attacking side by any means last year. 44 league goals was 13th in La Liga.
Mm. That's odd as well because people associate that sort of football with Setien, and Setien was the one in charge for the first 6 months, right?
Exactly. Well, to the end of the year, but he came in for a lot of criticism. I'll get on to him in due course. But
did they not let go of him halfway through the season?
No, he only left in May.
You're thinking of
Pablo Machin, yeah, exactly, who was in March. But yeah, Quique Setien, fascinating. He ended up getting semi-chased out of the club, which I hadn't quite realised at the time. Mm. They were not happy with him whatsoever.
But they were on a horrific run of form.
Horrific run of form, and supposedly he just never got along with the fans that well.
But to go from potential Barcelona boss, halfway through the season, the fans are absolutely clamouring for him, weren't they?
Around January time.
At the Camp Nou.
But a lot of that chat did come off the back of that
4-3 victory.
Yeah,
exactly. Really impressive wins against the top sides. They were 15th for goals against. Expected points ranked them as the 8th best side in Spain. They finished 10th. It was pretty okay. Lo Celso was their top scorer with 9 league goals. Like, this wasn't a vintage attacking side by any means. He was also 3rd for assists behind Tello and William Carvalho. So it was absolutely crucial to that side. Regular contributors, sort of Sergio Canales, Joaquin at 38, contributed 6 goals. And Loren Moren, who's been their star this year with 6. Only sort of one player took more than 3 shots. It wasn't a fantastic side. They had good players, but will be ultimately quite disappointed to finish where they did, considering their form up until sort of March time. Now, their summer. So, Real Betis, I hadn't actually quite realised until I was doing this research, they are not big spenders at all. Between 2009 and 2010, between 09 and 10 and 2015 and 16, so 7 years, they spent just under £30 million in 7 years, made a net profit of £6 million. In the last 4 years, they've spent a little bit more, but still only £208 million for the decade, which, considering Man United have spent close to, is it £600 million in the last 3 or 4 years? around that figure. I've sort of plucked that from my head.
Yeah, and but they're the Europa League pretenders of the Premier League, so they do correlate with Betis quite nicely.
Exactly, exactly. And they've only spent a net £46 million across the decade. So it's a pretty thrifty club. But their relative success of 18-19, those cup runs I talked about, those glamorous wins against the top sides, was always going to attract a lot of attention. So Lo Celso obviously moved to Spurs, £14 million loan fee, option to buy for £55 million. I'd be very surprised if they didn't take that up, especially considering his form in the last 2 weeks.
And the fact that Eriksen's definitely...
Exactly, and they'll have massive people, big names heading out the door, which I'm sure Joe might touch on later with his suggestion. Paulo Lopez also left for Roma. He'd only been at Seville-based club for a year, but performances were good enough to earn a move. Junior Firpo left for Barcelona. He was a very solid performer for them, about 3 tackle interceptions, pretty good attacking stats, could play on left mid as well, very useful. Incomings, they brought in Borja Iglesias, he's a 26-year-old.
Enrique's brother.
Yeah, came through the academy at Celta Vigo. Only ever made one appearance for them, then sort of shone at Zaragoza in the Segunda. Bought by Espanyol ahead of the 18-19 season, so last year. Got 17 league goals. There was only the big names of the likes of Messi, Benzema, Suarez, Iago Aspas, Ben Yedder that scored more goals than him in the league. But he was signed by Real Betis this summer for £25 million, brought in by their manager Ruby, who'd been at Espanyol with him, and in 12 La Liga appearances, 1 goal and 2 assists, so hasn't really hit the ground running.
Ah, that's where Ruby went. So he moved to Betis.
He moved to Betis, exactly. But I'll be concerned that he won't be staying there for that much longer.
Okay, because he did a good job at Espanyol.
He did.
And I can't remember who's in charge of Espanyol now, but I was surprised to see it.
Yeah.
I'll get it up while you're talking.
Yeah, he did a very good job. And he got he got promoted with Huesca the year before, did a very good job there, then moved to Espanyol. And after 1 year, I think they finished 7th. And now he's at Real Betis, but it's not gone so well. But obviously the key man that they brought in this summer that everyone, particularly everyone in the FD office, was sort of amazed that they managed to land was Nabil Fekir. 26-year-old, regular contributor when fit for Lyon in the league and Champions League for a few years now. Signed for just £17.8 million. Signed a 4-year contract in the process. Seemed like an absolute bargain. Absolutely amazing coup for Real Betis as well. He's part of the French World Cup winning squad. He made 6 substitute appearances. Not a regular starter, but still part of it. Joined Betis alongside his younger brother. I think he was part of the deal as well, called Yassin. And it marked the end of sort of Lyon's sort of generational homegrown talent that had come through together, like Lacazette, Tolisso, Umtiti. And these players have all sort of gone on to be world-class players. Well, maybe not so much Umtiti, but when fit, I suppose. And they were sold to sort of restructure the club's finances so they could fully own their Groupama stadium. And the new hierarchy of Juninho and Silvinho that came in the summer in Lyon were keen to keep him, but Fekir was just like, I've wanted to go. That he obviously had that failed move to Liverpool the year before, and he left in good faith, but they were like, you've done all you can here. Lyon captain, great performer for us, but, try something new.
Still missing him a bit, though.
Massively.
14th in the league, aren't they? Struggling.
Massively, yeah. Lyon are having a horrid time of it.
It's Pablo Machin, by the way, that's in charge of Espanyol.
Is he?
Bringing it full circle, yeah. That's
I'd missed that.
I was joining the dots,
that's
yeah.
That's crazy. First, he's gone from Sevilla to Espanyol. It's quite a drop down. Anyway, as we mentioned, Quique Setién left. The club had posted back-to-back top half finishes for the first time in over a decade. But the main feeling was this feeling of regression. So they'd finished 6th the year before, obviously got into the Europa League, as I then talked about. And that overperformance had allowed them to bring in players like Mark Bartra from Borussia Dortmund, William Carvalho from Sporting Lisbon, and Lo Celso from PSG. Players that they'd never have dreamed of signing when they're in their thrifty phase a couple of years before. And supposedly on the reading that I've done, there were some problems, mainly when teams sat back and counted against them. So in August 2018, they had nearly 80% possession against Levante, but lost 3-0. And in the return fixture against Levante, they had 72% possession and lost 4-0. So there was real dominance of the ball, but nothing really done with it. And they had no control over the game. It sounds like a sort of anti-Man City. I can't quite get my head around how they lose these games by an aggregate of 7 to Levante. Now, I was doing a bit of reading on this guy called Colin Miller, who's a La Liga expert. And he was saying that there was other elements at play. So Setién would criticise other teams' style of play in this sort of you know, dreams, you know, coming down on them being quite patronising, but without finding answers on how to counteract them.
Mourinho vibes.
Exactly. So just like shouting out blame at other teams. And eventually the ultra group Golsor organised protests against him, and their stadium was half empty for games against Villarreal and Huesca late in the season. So the Real Betis board were like, you know, we've got no loyalty to you. It was only the end of his second year. They were like, see you later. Brought in Ruby as head coach, and it's the club's 10th different appointment since January 2014. This is a real turnover club. They've had 9 different managers in that time, but 10 appointments because Juan Marino's done 2 spells. So it's a real topsy-turvy club. And
they're the Watford of bloody Spain.
Exactly,
mate.
Exactly. I know. I'm surprised they haven't, you know, got crap. They might well do have Igrassi, actually. It's not a bad shout. I might put that in there. And they haven't started well at all, as we've talked about. They won just 3 of their opening 13 La Liga games. They sit 17th, just 4 points clear of relegation. And the place, the team below them is actually Celta Vigo again, struggling once again. They've just had 1 win in their last 7 league games. They've conceded they've scored 6 goals in that time. They've conceded 12. They've conceded 5 goals in 2 games this year against Barcelona and Villarreal, who are, you know, 2 fantastic attacking sides on their day. But you can't be conceding 5 goals and you've got any, you know, top 8 ambitions, which is, yeah, I think is what they had at the start of the year. The stats aren't actually too bad. They've scored 15 goals in, what, 12 games or 13 games, which is the same amount as Atletico Madrid in third. But the big issue is their defence. No side's conceded more than their 23 goals, which is level with Espanyol. And only 9 sides in Europe's top 5 leagues have conceded more. And that's with teams like with Norwich and Southampton. And Toulouse have conceded a lot of goals so far as well. So they just can't sort it out at the back.
It's weird because, like, the sale of Firpo seems to have really affected them. But yeah, I saw a poll the other day that Firpo, by Barcelona fans, voted the worst signing of, like, the last 5 years. They absolutely hate him in Barcelona.
Really? Which, yeah, I think seems a bit harsh, because the brief highlights that I've seen of him in Barcelona, right, he seems like he's played all right. But they have in recent weeks put Nelson Semedo on the left, yeah, quite a bit as well. So maybe he just hasn't adapted quite as well.
I just hope they're not trying to tee him up to, like, Jordi Alba standards, because it's like, if you're trying to live up to Alba's level of ability across 5 years,
exactly,
or 6 years,
definitely the best left back of the last sort of five, six years, up there with Marcelo at least, although, yeah, that's a debate for another day. And they're conceding 15.2 shots a game, which is the second worst. Guess who they've got in goal? This is quite a niche one. He's an ex-Premier League goalkeeper. I'd be amazed if you got it.
Ross Turnbull.
It's that sort of vibe.
Brad Jones.
Is he British?
He is not. He's Spanish.
He's Spanish.
Not Brad Jones.
It's not Pepe Reina.
This is too difficult. Do you remember Joel Robles?
Yeah,
Everton.
Yeah.
He's in goal.
Oh, God.
And he hasn't had much protection in front of him, but he's also been sent off. He conceded a lot of goals in about a 3-game period as well. He's got 2 new fullbacks in front of him, Alfonso Pedraza, who's on loan from Villarreal, and Emerson, who they got in from Brazil. He's only kept 2 clean sheets in 13 league games. They lost the derby this weekend. They actually played really well in it, but they lost against Sevilla 2-1. Luke de Jong with his second goal of the season, was absolutely screaming into the top left. XG actually had it at 1.6 to 1 in Batista's favour. So they can be, you know, they can count themselves pretty hard done by at times. And they're actually 10th for expected goals, but they're 19th for expected goals against. So they desperately need to sort out that defence. But yeah, you see some of the players in midfield. You've got Canales, you've got Carvalho, you've got Fekir further forward, and you're just like, well, I think
they're playing like Norwich.
How's Fekir getting on? How's Fekir doing?
Fekir is not doing so well at all. So no one's taking more than his 2.8 shots, but he has only contributed, hang on, I've got it down here, 3 goals and he's got 3 goals, no assists.
3 goals, no assists. But only 12 games in.
It's
12, 13 games. It's not terrible.
But I think he'd only played 11, so it's not awful, but it's not Fekir numbers that we've seen in Lyon.
But the trouble is, at Lyon, he's able to feed the ball into Memphis Depay and Moussa Dembele.
Well, Birch and Traore.
Birch and Traore, yeah. So the drop off is massive.
Yeah, and I mean, he could have chose to stay, couldn't he? But
he could, though. Not if he needed to make the stadium.
At the start of the season, I was looking at his numbers after like 5-6 games for Real Betis, and he was taking over 4 shots, completing over 3 dribbles. So they must just be deteriorating. Mm.
Well, his dribbles are still really good. He's taking 3.8 a game, but I feel like he's maybe taking up too much responsibility on himself. because his shots have dropped from 4.1 to 2.8, his key passes from 2.3 to 1.4, and 2.8 shots and 1.4 key passes is not a bad return, but it's just not the Fekir we've seen in recent years. And his expected goals and assists have dropped from 0.7 to 0.25, which is about what you'd see from someone like a maybe like a Kovacic this year.
But you do have to wonder whether that is Real Betis's level, or is that the knee injuries finally catching up with it?
Potentially.
Like, we were always thinking that eventually that double knee injury was going to find its way.
His fitness record up until this season has been pretty, not impeccable, but much better than people perceive it to be.
I think it was that one shocking year at Lyon, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, where he was only fit for about 8 games. But other than that, he was pretty.
But it was also, I think it was the repair job done on the knee was not deemed particularly good.
Mm.
They didn't take the tendon from the hamstring, I think, which is where they're meant to take it from, took it from somewhere else. And I think that's the reason that Liverpool pulled out of the move in the end, is that they basically thought that the tendon would wear out.
His knee's a bit like Frankenstein. He's got a bit of everywhere in
there. Yeah.
Interesting. But I don't also think he's being helped by Ruby, to be honest. He doesn't seem to know his best formation. He started with 4-2-3-1. He then went to 4-4-2. Last few games, he's been playing 4-3-4-2-1, sorry. Borja Iglesias, his big summer signing, alongside Fekir. 1 goal, 2 assists in 12 La Liga games. Joaquin is still their top creator at 38. 2.3 key passes per 90. Very impressive. But I feel like, from what I've seen of them highlights-wise, they just seem to be struggling for control in midfield, and it's easy to attack their relatively new defence. And I don't think Joel Robles has covered himself in glory, but they've still got good players. Like, I feel like they'll stabilise, maybe finish 13th to 15th, I would have thought. I don't think...
Sack him then, if that's the case.
Yeah, I think he probably will go at some stage. But yeah, it's just their form in the last 7 games. It's not even like they started disastrously and haven't fully recovered yet. They're just being very mediocre.
Do you think they could get Marcelino in, or do you think that's too low level for him?
I think that's too low level for him, to be honest. I think you're probably looking at... I mean, we said it before as a bit of a joke, but Javi Gracia would be a pretty good appointment there. It's difficult to know who'd actually go into Real Betis because there's been such a turnover the last 5-6 years. But I'm slightly concerned by them at the start of this year. I think they might... They'll recover, hopefully. But yeah, at the moment, they're looking like a few more bad results, and you go into January and sort of threatened by relegation, it could turn into an absolute disaster. So watch out, Real Betis.
Oh dear, who's up next?
Real Betis? It's you, Joseph.
Oh my, that was a shocker. Deary me. So I'm bringing Tottenham to the table, who are just all over the place, aren't they? In a similar sort of vein of form to Betis. I think, did you say Betis have won 3 games
won
so
three,
far?
Yeah.
So same as Tottenham, who've won 3, drawn 5 and lost 4 in the Premier League so far. This season, obviously, also out of the League Cup already to Colchester United.
Hounding.
So I think the League Cup was probably their best shot at a trophy as well.
they're back to the Tottenham of like the mid-noughties.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a shame, isn't it? I mean, they've got enough points to scrape out the Champions League group already, really. I think they've got 7. Bayern are going to top it. They've got 12. And Red Star have got 3, I think, something like that. And Olympiacos 1. But the Premier League form is a shambles. 18 goals scored, 17 goals conceded so far this season, which just makes for ugly reading. And I think a lot of Tottenham fans will kind of agree. I think this is not just a 19-20 problem. This problem runs all the way through 2019. It kind of starts back in February. I was looking at their results, and I think the tipping point was a 2-1 away loss at Burnley. Sean Dyche weaving his magic back there. Wow. February the 23rd, that happened. Because up to that point, they'd only lost 6 games, hadn't drawn a single time, won all of the other games they competed in that season.
Yeah.
And then from there on in, it just totally, totally fell apart. Obviously, they didn't win another away game and still haven't won an away game since that result in the Premier League anyway. And I think the Champions League run, to be honest with you, covered up a lot of cracks. 12 games after Burnley, they only kept 3 clean sheets in the league. And that was against Brighton, Huddersfield and Palace. So not particularly good viewing in the back end of last season. And I think the summer, we all kind of looked at it and thought they've done an all right job here.
We were quite excited
about the signings of Tanguy and Ndombele and Lo Celso in particular. We thought, looking at that squad, midfield is the problem. If they can get 2 strong midfielders in, then they've had a really good time.
But
they got
like
two exceptional ones.
Even like Ryan Sessegnon, people were like, that's a great...
Yeah.
You can see
yeah.
Poch really turning that around. Obviously, he's still got plenty of time.
I think Ryan Sessegnon was an interesting one. And I think maybe I looked at it with slightly more trepidation because I don't know where he fits at Tottenham, because I don't think there's that many people who see Ryan Sessegnon as a legitimate left back, an out and out left back. Poch hasn't been deploying a three at the back system with wing backs, really, unless he's been in disastrous areas through injuries this season. And I don't see Ryan Sessegnon having a long term future as a left winger at the moment. Anyway, I haven't seen enough of him do it. He might well prove me wrong, but the front line for Tottenham Hotspur with Heung-min Son kind of playing out there, I don't see him usurping.
I mean, they're definitely not failing because of their recruitment in the summer. They've not really been able to get them on the pitch at the same time, have they?
Yeah, although I think to a level they are failing because of their recruitment in the summer.
Selling Kieran Trippier without a right back lined up was a bit of an odd one. I think we kind of said that at the time. Kyle Walker-Peters, what, back up to Serge Aurier? I suppose Foyth can play out there, but Foyth's been injured as well.
I'll come on to that. But
go on, I'll leave it to you.
But in terms of the recruitment, I think that they missed out on getting another centre-back in at minimum, given that Alderweireld and Vertonghen both refused to renew their contracts in the summer and are both out of contract this summer. So the pressure on the recruitment of a centre-back in either January or 2020 summer is absolutely massive, because they're going to be left with just Davinson Sanchez and Juan Foyth and Eric Dier backing them up in there, and that's nowhere
near
good enough.
Did they move for anyone?
No, they didn't really. Not that I can remember, and there was clear rejections for. It's also like they didn't move for a right back. You touched on it there. Why on earth, when they sold Trippier, did they not go for a right back? What a massive oversight, especially when Serge Aurier.
Exactly, when you're relying on Serge Aurier.
Yeah, and you look at the whole back line is a massive issue for Tottenham Hotspur. Hugo Lloris has been a constant sort of feature for errors. He's made more errors leading to goals than any other player in the Premier League over the last season and a half, or however long we are in now. Danny Rose didn't travel on the pre-season tour because Pochettino told him he has no long-term future at the club. Both the centre-backs are out of contract this summer. They sold the starting right-back. So that is a massive amount of issues. And then we'll even come on to Christian Eriksen, who is absolutely all over the place this season.
Yeah, he's phoned it in, hasn't he?
Christian Eriksen has fully phoned it in, I think. I mean, I've been to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium 3 times this season. He's been booed every time I've been there. So I think there are bigger issues than recruitment in terms of contractual situations within the club. I think Daniel Levy has to change his stance on giving older players contracts. You know, he has this sort of, I won't give contracts longer than a year to anybody over a certain age.
Well, that's not uncommon. Chelsea, to be fair.
It's worked at Chelsea to a level but Chelsea, what I will say, have a better academy and have deeper pockets to recruit.
And we're winning things as well.
And also, when three of your best players in Eriksen, Vertonghen and Alderweireld are all out of contract, change your strategy. You've got to keep one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
Because Tottenham can't afford, having spent $1 billion on a stadium, to replace all three to the same level they're leaving at.
There's still enough talent in that team.
At least
on the team sheet, you know, problems that run deeper aside, to not be in this situation, right?
Yeah, I think there is, but I think without those three names, this team looks horrible. Like, if you take Alderweireld, Vertonghen and Christian Eriksen out of the team, the back line is Aurier, Danny Rose, Juan Foyth.
Yeah, how many top sides can you say, you know, if you were to take three of their first team, first choice defenders out, would look okay?
But how many teams could you say?
I mean, Manchester City currently playing central midfielders.
How many teams could you say that three of their best players are in the last year of the contract? Probably none at the moment.
Because it is poor planning.
Because it's poor planning. It was poor recruitment in the summer when you actually look past the two central midfielders, which we ended up liking.
Well, I think they probably thought someone would come in for Alderweireld, and so did Alderweireld, and no one did for that 25 million, did they?
Then give him a new contract.
Yeah, but I think there might be concerns over his fitness there, but yeah.
I think it's been so, the defence has been so badly handled, it's unreal. I mean, they were lucky to finish fourth last season. If Arsenal hadn't shat
they
the
lost,
bed.
What did they lose? 13 games? Something like
if
that?
Arsenal hadn't shat the bed and at the end, I don't think they would have got it. The expected points had them on 61 points. They finished on 71. So, like, they scraped in to that top four, and Arsenal basically had Arsenal to thank for it. And this season is obviously got a whole lot worse, isn't it? Away form obviously hasn't got any better. They're still not won an away league game since January the 20th. That's the longest stretch of any top flight club.
It was against Fulham, I think.
Just they're in disarray, and I'll come on to this backline problems now, but one clean sheet in the league so far this season, that's it. That was 4-0 at home versus Crystal Palace. In terms of defensive duels, both tackles and aerial success, they rank 18th. in the league, which I just think like surmises it quite nicely. Like, they're not winning their individual battles and they're not cohesive as a unit at all. I think that whether or not the players have quit on Poch or not can be debated. What I do think Poch has got wrong is probably some of his team selections. And some of that has been down to injuries. Obviously, he's had bad injuries, hasn't he? He's had to place Sissoko at right back at times. But I think it needs adapting. If you've not got the strength to play four at the back, then shift to the five and play Davinson Sanchez, Vertonghen and Alderweireld and use wing backs, because obviously the back two isn't necessarily working. I mean, the right back area is an absolute mess at the moment. Trippier last season, I was looking at some of his numbers, pretty strong, particularly going forward, as we all know, 1.8 key passes, most of them probably from set pieces. But like, Wan Foyth has obviously not been fit, and I think Poch thought of him as the starting right back probably. Cole Walker-Peters, is he good enough for this level? Can be debated. I think he's probably more of a squad player. He's actually put up all right numbers, 2.7 tackles and 1.3 interceptions, but Poch, I don't think, thinks he's the man then. Aurier can be good on his day, can be horrific on his day. Like, his stats fluctuate so massively week to week, and he is just a walking yellow card. He's only had one red in 41 appearances, and I don't know how that's happened. he's like, just so reckless. But he's not only reckless with his discipline, he's also reckless in his positioning. Like, he's just flying out of position when
and
he doesn't
marking. I particularly remember that game against Serge Gnabry. Like, Gnabry put in about double the amount of tackles as him and just was rinsing him every single time. And obviously he was having an incredible game, but it was just like, it felt like the death knell of Serge Aurier at Spurs.
Yeah, and I think Hugo Lloris, obviously he's had a little bit of a drop off in terms of, he makes glaring errors, doesn't he? Like, match of the day highlight errors all the time, but he's not horrific, Hugo Lloris, and I think he would probably, if he had a better defensive structure in front of him, he'd probably look better. He's got the second highest save percentage in the league this season behind Alisson.
I think it's his distribution is like, his decision making is
shocking,
is not
and
good.
His decision making is all over the place. Yeah, so I think they'll probably persevere with him, but at the moment, I look at that back line, I think they need a whole new back line.
They're also not getting much cover in front of them, are they? Sissoko's trying his best to progress the ball, and it's being utilised in a number of positions, and Harry Winks' defensive numbers aren't particularly outstanding.
They're not outstanding. He's very comfy on the ball. Like, I think he's averaging like 70, 80 passes a game, like 93% pass accuracy. So he's very
very
clean on the ball.
Very good at resetting
but
the play.
But he's not a Wilfred Ndidi. Like, they don't have a Wilfred Ndidi, which is hard to find.
I feel like their problem in the last couple of years is that Wanyama's dropped off a lot and Dyer's dropped off a lot. I think it's because they wanted to leave a couple of years ago.
The drop off of Eric Dyer has just been astronomical. Mm. Like, he's fallen off a cliff.
But you don't think he was one of those players that was probably being carried by his teammates through the good patches? I don't think he's ever
Been excellent.
I actually thought he was quite good when he was breaking through.
I never think he's been off the level of some of his
players.
He's
a right-sided centre-back in a three.
He's
I
think on the weekend at Sheffield United kind of summed up Poch's troubles, having to play Eric Dyer, a right-footed defensive midfielder, arguably, as the left-sided centre-back from the ball playing. It's like, is this what we're having to deal with? And that, for me, is like, it's not comically bad in terms of recruitment, but if the whole back line needs changing, then you've got massive problems. Poch probably should have left in the summer. If I was Poch, I'd be sitting there thinking, fucking hell, I should have gone after the Champions League.
Well, the reports I've read that it took him a long, long time to recover from that loss.
Yeah.
And like, I think he was very close to leaving. Because he kept on making jokes before the final, like, oh, I actually might leave if I win it. But apparently, I think it was a T-Flow video, which was actually very good. And they were like, the effect that had on him, like, he was thinking about leaving for like a good few weeks, came back late, and then they had all these issues with contracts, and it just felt like a snowball effect.
Imagine when your chairman says we're willing to spend 100 million on two players, though. That's a compelling reason to stay, and feels like progression. But you match, like, I'm not too critical of their recruitment, but they definitely should have signed one defender. But if everyone stays fit, then it's a completely different scenario, which I guess is hard to cover for.
The right back situation is a little bit damning.
And if you think that, I don't know what's happened with Vertonghen and Alderweireld, particularly Vertonghen, because things have circulated around the club, haven't they, that we don't really have an idea about. But it feels like a bit of a maelstrom of like personal issues. Players are motivated.
It's contracts,
contractual disputes,
definitely,
and which he shouldn't be handling. Really,
lack of money, lack of trophies. I can see why you'd get fed up at Spurs, to be honest, after 6 years.
And like, it's not just the defence that is a problem either. Like, this midfield is an issue. Like, you touched upon it earlier. Like, Giovanni Lo Celso, okay, bought in on loan, and we love we think he's going to be a fantastic player, and hopefully he turns out to that. But he's played 150 minutes of football. Like, he's a loan signing. He needs to make an immediate impact.
And it's not just that he has been injured. It's also been that Dele Alli went for a period where he was largely ineffectual. Yeah. I hope he's back now. And he's been decent in the last couple of weeks, hasn't he?
And Christian Eriksen has fallen off a cliff.
Well, not interesting.
Don't know what's gone on with Christian Eriksen's lowest key pass of any period at Tottenham, like 1.2 per night. Like, we think of Christian Eriksen as like a free key pass
exactly,
a game man, which is just massive. His lowest shots, lowest dribbles, lowest pass involvement, lowest pass accuracy percentage at Tottenham. Like,
which is why
he's phoned it in. Yeah. I think he's phoned it in.
And it's well worth highlighting, not just for his kind of output, but the decline in Harry Kane's output. Like, they had such a good relationship before. So when people say that Harry Kane is kind of not finished, because that is extremely strong, but when they say he's struggling more now than ever before, surely there's a correlation there with Eriksen.
But they should have sold Eriksen. It's the simple fact they should have sold Eriksen, because now they're going to make zero money on him. And he was a £70 million asset in the summer.
But no one came in for him.
I don't know whether nobody came in for him or teams came in for him and spoke to him and went, we'll just wait.
Like, sniffs.
There's a lot of talk about Juventus.
Why would you come in for him if you're going to get him for free next summer and you know he's not going to sign a new contract? Like, if you're Tottenham, I think you've just got to be offloading him. Like, you've got to be going, okay, we can give him to you for 40.
But you've got to be quite careful if you're Christian Eriksen. Will a Real Madrid or Juventus come in on you for when you're producing this current form?
If he's free. If he's free, he gets a big move, doesn't he? Yeah. Somebody gets a big move.
Manchester United would snap him up in a heartbeat if he was free.
You've mentioned Winks and Sissoko. Probably not good enough. They're not elite, defensively in particular. Harry Winks, 2.5 tackles and interceptions per 90, but he is a good game controller, and I actually think if he had a better defensive midfield partner alongside him, he'd be fine in there, progressing the ball. He's still like 9 deep progressions a game. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like he'd be good in a 3. As the playmaker.
Like, Ndombele has started brilliantly, like really, really well. 2.5 tackles, 1.8 interceptions, 2 key passes. Like, he's throwing up massive numbers, but it just feels like ramshackle, doesn't it? Like, there's defensive problems, there's attacking midfield problems, like they haven't got a creator anymore, really. Now they've lost Eriksen. Harry Kane, like, I've got some of his numbers down here. He is in serious decline, like season on season. From 2017 onwards, his shots have gone 5.3, 3.7 this season, 2.7. His expected goals have gone 0.8, 0.6, 0.4. Like, he is in decline.
At least as the world leading marksman that he was before.
Exactly.
I think he's
still very good.
Yeah.
But
he's
no longer can be relied upon, I don't think, to be a 35 goal a season striker.
No, at least not in this side as well. It'd be so interesting to see.
Yeah.
You just can't judge him because there's so many other issues.
If he was in a Bayern team or Real Madrid team, he would be a 35 goal.
Yeah, we like to peddle stats and they make sense, and you've contextualised them well. But I also agree in that I think his decline's a little bit exaggerated. Like, could he get back to those numbers if you put him in a superior side? I think maybe pretty quickly. Mm. I don't know for how long, because you don't know how much impact those injuries have had on him.
And look at his record for England as well, who are a much better side than Spurs at the moment, and it's fantastic. Like, I don't think he's finished as a...
I think the issue for Harry Kane is, though, is he ever going to play in one of those teams?
Yeah.
Mm.
Probably not now. He's not going to get I don't think he's going to get a £250 million move, and that's what it's going to take to get him out of this club. He signed a new contract last year.
Mm. Is he in a condition where he can carry Spurs as well? Like, having played so much football, it's starting to feel like it's kind of
like
taking
if you were Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, would you go for him at that price? I don't think I would. I think there's other options available that are going to be cheaper and probably have
look at
more
players
longevity.
Like, coming through even this year, like Haaland. Look at Werner, a good 4 years younger than him or so.
Yeah.
He's felt like a Manchester United player for a little while now, hasn't he? That's probably more likely destination than a Real Madrid.
I just think it doesn't work for any of the parties. Like, Man United aren't good enough for Harry Kane right now. Harry Kane is too expensive for Manchester United, who have clearly tried to change their transfer plans over the last 12 months. And I think it doesn't align anywhere.
Though he fits in with your identity. I know you're trying to do less extravagant fees, but you're trying to go British, you know.
But if you're Harry Kane, why would you join United?
Yeah, no, I get it.
There's just so many problems with that move. So I think I've just looked at what they need to do. I think they need to
You've given some compelling reasons to join United. The Spurs is no longer as safe a bet as it used to be, is it? So, like, I think now it's becoming more feasible.
It's mainly where you think both teams will be in 5 years' time. I think United probably have a better chance of being higher than Spurs.
If you can convince Maguire
in 5 years' time.
I'm not saying Maguire's of the same standing as Harry Kane, but Maguire had options, didn't he? Like, Manchester City were interested in him to the tune of 75 mil. And if he says no to the 85 mil move, you can imagine City coming back in for him. But yeah.
So I just had a quick look on how we could potentially fix things.
I like it.
And I was looking... What do you boys think about Timo Werner to Tottenham Hotspur? Do you think if Tottenham came in with the right wage structure, he'd be interested? 30 million euro buyout clause. And I know that he's going to want to stay at Leipzig to see out this season because he's in with a shot of winning the Bundesliga and there's going to be better teams available. But I think if you're Tottenham, this is like the sort of player you've got to compete for. You can't just let him slip to, let's say he goes to Man United or something like that. You can't just let him slip to a Liverpool second team or...
It's exactly the sort of player they should go for.
That's the player I think they should be going for.
I mean, if they're chasing titles in the next 3-4 years, that's exactly who they need to go for.
And also, he's putting up 1.5 expected goals and assists this season, Timo Werner. What's going on there?
Yeah, but they've been sickening, haven't they?
Yeah, but that's worryingly
large. And he can play on the left as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He can play along that forward line.
He can. He's obviously got 15 goal contributions in 11 games in the Bundesliga as well, so flying. I also think... I had a look at a lad called William at Wolfsburg.
Ah, yeah, the right back.
Yeah. He's also been playing a little bit in DM. Yes, which does skew his numbers a little bit.
Raf Guerrero vibes.
But 5.7 tackles and interceptions per 90, a key pass, 1.5 dribbles. Wolfsburg, like, they're 10th in the league, but got the best defence in the league as well. So I think he wouldn't be too bad of an option. I think he's 24, maybe 25. And then the other name I think that they should absolutely 100% be in for is Hakim Ziyech. I think Hakim Ziyech is the perfect player for Tottenham Hotspur post Christian Eriksen. Still only 26 years old, still putting up frightening numbers in every single aspect in the Eredivisie. And I don't think other top teams are going to go for him. I think he's probably just the wrong side of 25 for a Man City or a Real Madrid or a Barcelona. And I think you could get him out for a sub 50.
He'd be so hungry as well to prove himself in a top league as well.
Mate, he's 13 goal contributions in 12 games in the Eredivisie. It's like 4.8
Again,
shots
like,
per
this
game.
This is his third year of doing it as well.
Yeah, exactly. 4.8 shots per game, 3.5 key passes. I think get Eriksen out in January. Hopefully you can get him out for 20 to 30 million in January and then get Ziyech in for 40.
God.
It's not the worst.
20 to 30 for Eriksen. It's just crazy to think, you know, 2 years ago we were debating whether Barcelona should have gone for Eriksen over Coutinho.
He signs a pre-contract with Juventus.
No, I get it. It's what you got to do.
Take your 20 million loss.
If you were Tottenham, you got between 30 and 40, you'd be absolutely delighted.
And then centre-back, I was thinking maybe a Nathan Ake. Might be a little bit expensive for Tottenham Hotspur, but I don't think Chelsea will go back in for him now that the likes of Tomori have come through and really shone, and Zouma is kind of improving, Rudiger to come back, and I don't think Man City go in for him. I think maybe they would, but the chat was Man City in January, wasn't it? But Tottenham Hotspur should be competing for him.
I love Nathan Ake.
Massive improvement.
It's really divided there. I think Pato's not a very big fan of him for some reason. I think he's great, and he's been great for a few years. Very solid on the ball and useful in both boxes as well.
So do I. But yeah, Tottenham Hotspur in massive, massive trouble. Pochettino to Bayern in the summer, I think, will happen. And then they'll have to restart.
Depressing. Depressing, depressing. I just feel like they missed a year. That year missed on transfers, not just incomings, but outgoings as well. They should have sold players then. They missed out on a massive influx of money. Like, the fact that they've effectively missed out on at least £70 million on Eriksen is just really poor squad management. That could go a long way to fix their other areas.
Especially when you've spent £1 billion on a stadium and need to reinvest money in the squad.
Yeah, I mean, you could maybe
they should have sold one of those
a little
stars.
Bit for not having that foresight, because Eriksen's output has just been relentless, hasn't it, for his whole tenure at Spurs, apart from this year.
And who could have predicted the amount that he's given up?
Yeah, the personal drop-off.
But equally,
to the point where, like, the narrative is he's unprofessional now, but is that true?
But equally, if you have no money and you're Tottenham Hotspur, and it wasn't just one summer, it's two summers of very little spending. It's like, if we can't do it one summer, then we spend £1 billion. We need to recoup assets. We've got to sell.
I'd maybe say that more about Alderweireld at the time than Christian Eriksen, because Alderweireld, there was
heavy
interest from Jose's Manchester United, wasn't there?
Yeah,
for quite a chunk.
They rejected. They rejected £50 million bid for Eric Dier from Manchester United. Let's not forget that.
That's up there with Bayern rejecting 80 for Thomas Müller from Man United.
Like, Very, very 70? Odd decision making at the top level in terms of outgoings. But either way, Tottenham, big trouble.
It is these, need to sort it out. These kind of moments you've highlighted. Obviously easy with retrospect, but they're the fine margins, aren't they, between being a top club, being a Champions League club, and slipping through the net in the Premier League. Talking of slipping through the net, I have picked a Napoli, who have been in the public eye of late because of a row with De Laurentiis, who me and Joe again inexplicably had a phone call with, still one of my favourite. Was it him or his son?
I think it was his brother.
Or his brother. We had a phone call with A.D. Laurentiis at some point on Football Daily. I'm still not quite sure how that happened to this day. But let's just recap their last year, because it was a pretty comfortable first year under Ancelotti, and that is kind of what he does, isn't it?
Safe pair of hands.
Exactamundo. And it just went by a little bit unnoticed. So let's recap. So they finished second in 18-19 on 79 points. That was 11 behind eventual winners Juventus, but 10 points in front of third place Atalanta. So there was no real title race. Juventus didn't win any of their last five games and Napoli won four. So that shortened the gap somewhat. So it probably seemed a little bit tighter than it actually was after that final stretch.
Because they did win the league in March or something, didn't they, Juve last year?
Yeah, despite not playing all that well, which we'll touch upon in a minute. But 6 points separated third and seventh. So that's where the excitement was. So we got pretty excited about Serie A, but not at the very summit. More in terms of competing for UCL places. And that was Roma and Lazio that ultimately missed out, wasn't it? You know, which ended well because that double header against Lazio. Cheers. Right, the little Donkeys scored 74 goals last year, only bested by Atlanta's 77. That was four more than the eventual winners Juve and only three fewer than in Sarri's final season. So no real problems on that front. Ancelotti's come in, he sustained them as a top attacking side. They conceded 36 goals as well in the process, which was joint second best with AC Milan, surprisingly. Gattuso's AC Milan were actually pretty watertight, which was the same with the club he was managing, I want to say Pisa.
Yeah, someone like that from like Serie B.
Serie C, where they conceded 11 goals and were still relegated. I think it was Serie B.
And it's not gone well since, has it? No.
He actually had, before he left, Gattuso had the third best win ratio after Allegri and someone else.
Really?
So I think they might be regretting firing.
They were just boring
at this point, but they there wasn't much in the way of inspiration. Like I said, this kind of performance largely unsurprising given the squad that Ancelotti inherited. They're little bit old, but in good shape. They led the league for shots last year with 18.6 per 90, as well as having the highest pass accuracy, the second most possession. So all these things you've come to expect of Napoli. That was still the case despite Sarri's departure. Forward line was still shit hot. Milik got 17. I think he made a very good comeback from injury. Was it that season?
Yeah, did have a really bad one.
Mertens got 16 and 11 assists. Insigne, 16 goal involvements. Callahan, 10 assists, three goals.
Not
so
too bad.
Good creative force. So kind of credible, you know, from Ancelotti, because when someone like Sarri departs, someone who's been a pretty seminal appointment for your club, it can lead to utter chaos.
And Jorginho is so key
very
in that
good
midfield.
Not really
well.
Touched upon him in my research either.
He was like the glue that held that midfield together, and people were talking about when he left there was going to be a huge drop off. Alan wasn't going to be able to perform as well.
Well, it was him and Alan, wasn't it? They dovetailed so nicely, and they really galvanised the side. Understat actually had them down last year as the best side in the league, which is pretty interesting. So 3 points ahead of Atalanta, who led for a lot of the season, but I'm guessing it was Napoli's strong finish that kind of pipped them to the post. Juve actually fourth behind Inter and third. So
but again, that is because I think they won the league, so they just sacked it off.
Yeah, a little bit, but they were winning ugly last year, and the Juventus hierarchy probably justified in wanting to freshen things up. You know, when you're on top, it's the perfect time to change that age-old adage. But Understat also rated Napoli as the best side in 15, 16 and 17, 18. So for Napoli not to have one league title in the last 4 years is a bit of a crime, given the football they have played.
And maybe their style of football does favour the statistical, like the models a little bit. Yeah,
like into good areas.
Because
very often.
Good areas, and if you play very attacking football.
If you're dominating the ball, then you're conceding lower quality chances, I'd imagine, on average. But Sarri, you know, on a side note, probably almost deserves to win this Scudetto ugly. You know, people are saying Juventus aren't playing his brand of football as of yet, but he's played that brand. He's played winning football and not won anything.
It would be class to see Conte win it, though. He goes to Juve and that's the one season they can't win it.
Yeah, I mean, last season Juve apparently 19 points better off than they should have been, which is mental. Massive. And you know, Juve might be one of those teams that, again, the expected goal metric doesn't favour, because it doesn't really take into account the position of the defender when the opposition shoots, and a lot of the time it's, you know, Chiellini's head between the goal and a shot.
This is why Ben Mee and Tarkowski are insanely
it's over, why Sean Dyche, like you said, and
that's why they wanted Dwight McNeil,
and why Lucien Favre's team often why he always defies
always
the model. There's
very
few managers that outperform the model. Lucien Favre is one, because his Gladbach side, even Dortmund to an extent now, they don't mind conceding possession until it's their third. And then they're like, you are not going to be able to shoot through this amount of bodies. I think less so at Dortmund now. It's obviously more expansive owing to the personnel he has. But yeah, this season was seen as the season to take advantage of the managerial change. You know, Ancelotti had established himself. Allegri and his all-conquering ways had left. The pot not be spent $115 million. This included Hirving Lozano for $35 million, who has underwhelmed. Two goal contributions to his name. Manolas for $32 million, which was a little bit.
Well, we all hated that move. Yeah,
I don't mind him, especially after that goal against Barcelona. But for $32 million, yeah, there was definitely better options in the market. He's averaging 1.9 long balls. So I was looking at some of his stats just to see where he's kind of coming undone. His defensive contribution is not great, but it wasn't adjusted for possession, the stats I was looking at, and they do average a lot of possession, so we'll forgive him in that regard. But 1.9 long balls, Raul Albiol, he was supposed to be replacing, was hitting like between 7 and 10 at his time there. Absolutely sickening. So not a touch on Albiol. And they signed Mere, the goalkeeper, for $20 million, who has been absolutely chuffing superb.
Yeah, oh my God. What game was I watching? I was watching Napoli-Leipzig when Haaland scored. Mere kept him in the game. If Mere hadn't been playing,
Salzburg.
What did I say?
Leipzig. You said Leipzig.
Yeah, Salzburg. He was outrageous. Mm. If he must have made 6 or 7 saves in the first half. If he didn't do that, they would have been 5-0 down.
Mate, that's been a recurring theme of their season. I went back and watched all of the highlights for all of the games, the 12 match days so far, and that's what I'm going to talk about now, because it's very rare we get, like you said at the start, you're kind of going to steer clear of the narratives and the historical elements, because we do that in a lot of podcasts. I thought it would be quite nice to go through a few of the games in a more granular fashion. So I went back and watched the highlights, and Mere's real so far this season.
So good.
Ridiculous, man. But this is the story so far this season, so we'll move on from last season. So Napoli are currently 7th in Serie A on 19 points, having won 1 of the last 5 games. Now, as of match day 12, they're 11 points off Juventus and 10 off second place Inter Milan. So it's already looking likely that they're just competing to retain their status as a Champions League club, with the likes of Lazio, who are third best team in Italy, defeated twice by Serie A. Easy. Farmers League. Anyway, high flying Cagliari, whatever. Just can't say it.
Your nemesis.
And a pretty consistent Atalanta and a resurgent Roma, who they actually lost to in match day 11, which we'll cover in a minute. So like I said, let's go through some of the opening fixtures, because the first 4 games went pretty well, despite that unfortunate loss to Juve, which we're all discussing in the office, because it was that one where Koulibaly scores the last minute goal when no one's near him.
Horrific.
A good comeback
they
as well.
They came from 3 goals down, you had to lose 4-3, but still, away from home to the league favourites, and XG had them in touching distance at 2 to 1.5 in Juve's favour. So that loss is quite easy to rationalise. They recover from that with a solid win over Sampdoria. Really nice brace from Mertens. Took him to 3 goals in his first 4 appearances. So they're keeping up. Mertens is firing on all cylinders. Everything's looking hunky-dory. He also scored an absolute worldie against Fiorentina in the opening fixture, which I believe they won 4-3. That's definitely worth checking out. Match day 4, pretty rudimentary battering of Lecce. No great shakes, are there?
Lecce.
Then comes the sucker punch against Cagliari. Cagliari.
I think
it's just something my brain will never register.
I just call him Cagliari.
Yeah, it's a soft G, and every time I look at it, I think I'm going to fuck this up, and I do. Cagliari. Napoli hit the woodwork twice, had a man sent off, and come up against an inspired Robin Olsen. Do you remember Robin Olsen?
I do, yeah.
So Roma bought him, yeah, from Copenhagen.
It's a disaster there, somewhere.
To replace Alisson. And he's in Sardinia now on a season-long loan, so they didn't part ways with him. But he was absolutely unreal in this game.
Was he?
He made five saves. But this was a game where Cagliari, just saying it now, they took five shots. Napoli took 30. They scored with their only shot on target. And to add insult to injury, it was actually Koulibaly that got sent off in the 87th minute for dissent. Not someone that you want banned for any game, any time. He's just their linchpin, isn't he, at the back? But again, they bounced back with victories over newly promoted Brescia. It's Balotelli's Brescia. Balotelli actually scored his first goal against them. And Verona, which is pretty, again, rudimentary stuff, like I said, with an away draw against Torino sandwiched in the middle, which was a boring game. Neither side producing an XG of over one. I don't even think they got near it. I think it was in the 0.5 region. And this is the start of their knack of drawing, which I believe is what the chairman wants to combat. He thinks they're uninspired. He thinks they're unmotivated. But we'll get onto that in a second. But until this point, things are relatively okay in Naples. The chairman's not threatened to sell all his best players. He's not tried to send them off to
There's no revolt.
To a camp. I mean, camp sounds a bit strong. to like a retreat, let's say. Then comes back-to-back games with Atalanta and Roma, the other kind of pretenders to the UCL promised land. So Meret has his one and only stinker against Atalanta. He lets Remo Freuler shot crawl under his legs in a 2-2 draw. XG actually had it 3.2 to 1.34 in their favour, so a pretty hard one to swallow for Ancelotti's men. Milik, who netted in the game, missed two absolute sitters. They outshot Atalanta in the game as well, 19-14, which doesn't happen a lot. They're actually league leaders in Serie A for shots per night with 19.6. Only one team are taking more shots in Europe's top five, gentlemen. Who is it?
Liverpool.
You get one guess each. You've said Liverpool, Joe.
One side taking more shots than Atalanta.
Yeah, in Europe's top five.
PSG?
No, it's Manchester City on 21.5. Come on, that's basic.
And they still got smacked 4-0 by Dynamo Kiev.
Who, Atalanta? Yeah. They are not doing well in the Champions League.
They've been a different beast in the Champions League. An ugly beast. So against Rome, our performance levels drop. So they deserve a win in that game against Atalanta, but not here. They only take four shots in the Roma's penalty area compared to the nine they took against Atalanta 3 days before. I was trying to come up with an indicator there for how kind of easily their attack had been nullified. That's as close as I could come in, with the day's prep time. Zaniolo scored an absolute thunder bastard against them. It was superb. That's his third goal in nine starts. And then I went down the rabbit hole, like I normally do with this research. I started looking at Zaniolo's numbers for 20 minutes. Not really kicked on in the way I wanted him to, because he's a bit of a don, isn't he? Only taking 2.5 shots, puts in absolutely zero defensive work. Dribbling's still okay, just in case you wanted to know about Zaniolo.
I think he's nearly topped his goal contributions from last year, though. And he's been linked with a move to Juve, as I wrote in Transfer Talk this week.
Yeah, I mean, who hasn't? Do they sign players for fees anymore apart from Ronaldo?
It was 35 million and he's got 4 years on his contract and they're not going to go.
Yeah, he scored his first goal not long ago. Napoli did hit the frame twice against Roma. They conceded two penalties. Meret saved one. Milic brought them back into it very briefly, scoring in four games in a row for the first time in his career. And his form's probably been one of the only silver linings of their recent rut. Meret also made an unreal save in this game from a Pastore header, which, like I said, has been a common theme throughout this season, although he does rotate with David Ospina quite a bit.
Okay.
Inexplicably, the man with no neck, as George Wright would say. Eight starts versus four starts.
I think he's very young though.
Yeah.
He's about 20.
And I don't know if he's been injured at any point. Again, didn't look into that. They might be looking to protect him, but he's been bloody good. He's currently averaging three saves per 90, which is twice that of David Ospina, more than Gallini at Atalanta, and on a similar level to your boy Paolo Lopez at Roma, who joined, like you said, who is a bloody excellent goalkeeper. I mean, yeah, we'll just get you a nice tan.
Anyone bald on Twitter is just my lookalike, apparently.
Welcome to my world. Anyone ginger is mine.
Right. So that's their bang average form. And it's now been exacerbated.
So what's going on behind the scenes?
It's now been exacerbated by this falling out of the owner.
Yeah.
So following that draw with Salzburg, where you were saying Meret kept them in the game,
yeah,
the players and Ancelotti reportedly refused to board a bus heading to a training camp organised by club owner and potential phone call receiver of me and Joe, Aurelio De Laurentiis, at Castle Volturno, by the way, if you wanted to know where the destination was. Doesn't sound like a camp, does it? Instead, returning to the homes. Now, this isn't uncommon in Italy for a chairman to do when a team is struggling. They're called ritiros. Ritiro?
So is it a grilling by the chairman in a nice location?
Effectively, he thought they needed to bond. Like, instead of going home, seeing their families, it was a little bit like siege mentality. And it is where a team is confined to a hotel or sometimes a club's training base. And it is more commonplace in Italian football for sides on a bad run than in England, where if you told a Premier League superstar to get on the bus after a game, he'd be like, sorry, what?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm driving home in my Lamborghini. Now, the club have since threatened to take legal action against its own players.
I saw this.
So it's not going down well.
The statement was unreal. It was a club statement on the website saying we're going to sue our own players.
And
On what bounds? I mean, grounds, even?
It must have taken this. This is more... It's not a reflection of their run in the Champions League, where they're second quite comfortably. So they're doing okay in Europe. This is, I'm guessing... De Laurentiis has looked at this more holistically and been like, we're not playing that well. Ancelotti's not really found a system, which we'll touch upon in a minute. And we just keep drawing every fucking game. Let's send the boys on to a camp. Into a camp. Got to stop saying camp. But then, bizarrely, the club came out and said it was Ancelotti's idea to do. Which doesn't make sense because apparently Ancelotti... in a pre-match interview, said he didn't really agree with this methodology. And then he was the one that let the players go home. And having read his book, and, well, halfway through, he does seem like the sort of manager who'd be like, listen, you go home. I'll face the wrath of the chairman. Because that's what
he does for his players.
He gets on side with them. I'm reading in this excerpt, like a bit where 11 o'clock, he gets a text off John Terry saying, do you want to come out for dinner or 10 o'clock or something? And he ended up meeting them. And the Chelsea squad were like completely flabbergasted. But like, that's the sort of guy he is. He's sociable. People call him Mr. Don't they? Well, that's just a common thing across Europe. But he's well known for being an extremely lovable guy.
Has he not taken the side of the owner now? I'm sure I read that he has basically like flip-flop between the two.
Well, this is the weird thing, mate, which would suggest there's some kind of like underhand politics at play, because he disagrees with it before the match. The players go home and he goes to this camp where the owner is.
Just him?
Alone, yeah. Like, oh, he goes. And that kind of fits the narrative wherein he's going to take one for the team, basically. He also refused to do any media after the game, and a press silence has been ordered by the club, as if to say, like, we need to get our story straight before we start coming out with all these different versions of events and people just, you know, unpick us from outside. So confusingly, a club statement this week said, it also made clear the responsibility to decide in ordering days, I don't think this is translated very well, in a training retreat lies with coach Carlo Ancelotti. So he's gone from being publicly backed over his form to potentially being thrown under the bus. And Italian press now linking him with Boca Juniors, 2-0 Sports saying this was this morning that AC Milan want to bring him back. According to Gazzetta dello Sport, De Laurentiis is now willing to sell Dries Mertens in January. He seems to be the butt of his fury. He's also said in the past he doesn't want to keep the Belgian on his current salary. He's, of course, 32 now. I'm guessing his last deal was a bumper deal. Corriere dello Sport claiming that the Belgian's going to sign a pre-contract agreement with Inter in January. So that's pretty tasty. But he's just 5 goals short of the club record. Recently overtook Diego Maradona as well. So
he could do that before January. Fingers crossed. Go on, Dries.
Potentially. Callejon, also 32, attracting interest from China. Might be linking it with his old buddy.
What about Alan? What's he doing? We could do have a midfielder at United. I wouldn't mind him.
Like, I think you highlighted it earlier, without Jorginho, his place in the side hasn't been as cemented or seen as crucial. That might be a bit of a generalisation from me, but yeah.
Like, I've never really watched Napoli religiously, and when I watched them against Salzburg, I said earlier in the Europa League, I mean in the Champions League, Alan was just run over in central midfield. Yeah. Way too quick for him.
But they're playing at the moment, so let's go on to kind of a summary of events. They're playing a bit of a 4-4-2 at the moment with Callejon and Insigne lined up on the wings.
Yeah, and Callejon was horrific.
And it's Milik and Mertens, but they've always been players who have come inside, like Callahan's famous run is that run from right to left where he comes across the centre, or they overload the left-hand side and switch it to Callahan on the right. And Insigne always comes inside, loves that little finesse shot, doesn't he, to the far post. So if they're playing as traditional wingers, it does seem a little bit mind-boggling. And also, I mean, that's a lot of defensive onus on the two central midfielders. And when Alan doesn't play, I've got the most kind of lined up XI here. When Alan doesn't play, it's Fabian Ruiz and Zielinski, who I've always thought of as kind of forward-thinking players. I mean, Ruiz...
Fabian Ruiz can do a bit of that.
Yeah, Ruiz is, yeah, a little bit like Ceballos when he was at Betis, right? That's... They were sort of... He was supposed to be his replacement to an extent. I mean, his defensive contribution is over three, so it's solid, but they don't have an exceptional ball winner in there or anyone who's going to shield that defence. I'm guessing, you know, when you've got Koulibaly...
Whatever happens, maybe you don't need it, but... there.
Diawara went to Roma.
Yeah, he went to Roma this summer.
Diawara went to Roma. I mean, again, they
didn't really play him last year.
They could probably use him. Zielinski, like I said, picture him, imagine him as a forward-thinking player, and he loves to just take shots from range. And his key passes aren't that good, and his defensive contribution isn't that good. So I've not looked at all his metrics, but it would seem that he's underperforming or maybe out of place in the current lineup. Yeah, to summarise, Napoli now on four draws in the last five games. Scored 13 goals in the first four games and have only scored eight in their subsequent nine. So down on goals as well, but Milik is kind of keeping them at the forefront in that regard. His expected goals and expected assist total is 1.34.
Wow.
But I think he's only clocked up how many minutes? 434.
So
we'll wait for the sample size to get a little bit bigger before we get carried away with that. Expected points has them in seventh. So I haven't even been unlucky in that regard. Napoli closer to the relegation zone now than they are the top. Squad-wise, average age is 27.2, which is about bang in the middle of the table. Serie A-wise, Juventus is the oldest.
Juventus is the oldest
on 28.9. So there's not massive surgery that needs to be done. Like I said, they could probably look for an outstanding ball winner or an outstanding deep-lying playmaker. Fabian Ruiz has caught the interest of Real Madrid this term. He's been absolutely superb all-rounder. But the fact that all the press is saying that Ancelotti should switch to a 4-3-3 and might switch to a 4-3-3 after the international break would suggest the current setup is dysfunctional. I just think there's too much onus on Ruiz and Zielinski doing everything, and they're two guys that aren't going to be putting up five tackles in interceptions. You know, not even one of them is. They've got Milan in their next fixture.
Huge.
So a perfect opportunity to take advantage of another big club currently.
Hashtag Zlatan
in the doldrums. Yeah. Well, there were link with Zlatan.
Yeah, I know.
Napoli as well.
Well, the MLS chairman came out midweek and said that he's gone back to Milan. He didn't say which one it was.
Interesting.
It's definitely AC. I doubt it'll
be Inter. Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku definitely not surrendering their starting position, are they? So that's Napoli, lads. And that is us done at home. We've not done a fact with Rafa Benitez for about 6 months.
Actually.
Which has been noticed amongst the hardcore.
Yeah, I saw people calling us out for that. Actually.
Podcast supporters. So
get over it, mate. Get over it.
Or we could bring it back. Yeah, we might bring it back, after the international break ourselves. Maybe if we get some new blood in the podcast, they'll have some new lies to tell.
It was always my favourite segment. I always loved it.
Some yarns to weave.
I know. But it's just a shit. We've run out of stories.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. And time to even just prep for the podcast. Never mind, like, think of three. What was it? Two lies and a truth.
He can't just be a story.
He's got
either.
It now.
Nailed it.
He can't just be a story. It's got to be a story nobody here's heard. So all your best stories don't work because everybody in the office knows you're telling the truth. So it's got to be a brilliant story that you've never told before. It's fucking impossible.
And I know Pato put out a quick reminder, didn't he, on the feed? I saw just a 1 minute explainer as to what's going on. But if you haven't checked that out yet, then we are making this weekly and absorbing the game's gone mad into the extra time product at large. But within that, we're going to mix it up. So these are kind of what we perceive as our deep dives, aren't they? We're going to do some more weekly stuff. We're going to maybe do some mailbags from you guys at home. So if you've got any of the podcast ideas, let us know. Get at us on Twitter and Instagram, so on and so forth, because we're looking to mix it up a little bit. Not least because these take quite a long time.
They do.
That's it. Anything else to say, chaps?
No, thank you very much.
There we go.
Enjoyed it.
Bye.
See ya.